Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host. The military health system is a vital component of our national security strategy. With a diverse offering of healthcare services, logistics, public health, research and training, and supporting our armed forces, the Defense Health Agency, DHA, is an integral component of the military health system, serving as a strategic enabler, ensuring a medically ready force and a ready medical force that seeks to improve readiness, health, care, and lower costs. More than ever, DHA is tasked with leading these efforts to create a more integrated system of readiness and health. What are DHA's strategic priorities? How is DHA working to create a more integrated healthcare system? And what is DHA doing to improve the readiness and health of its service members? We'll explore these questions and so much more with our very special guest, Vice Admiral Raquel Bono, Director of the Defense Health Agency. Vice Admiral, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Also joining us from IBM is Mark Newsom. Mark, welcome.
Glad to be here.
So, Vice Admiral, before we delve into specific initiatives, would you provide us with an overview of the Defense Health Agency's mission? How has it evolved since its inception?
Oh, great. Well, we have been in evolution for some time now, as you'll probably recall. We were actually stood up in 2013, and we reached full operating capability in 2015. And that's when I came in November of 2015, as the second director of the Defense Health Agency. And what we did at that time is we had an opportunity to see how could we help create efficiencies and savings for the military health system. And one of the first places we looked at were ten shared services. And these represent about 85% of the shared functions and processes that occur across Army, Air Force, and Navy medicine. Things like logistics, health information technology, the TRICARE health plan, education and training, pharmacy, things like that that we knew happens across all of the services. So that was the first initial part of the DHA, the Defense Health Agency portfolio. In addition to that, we also had oversight of the National Capital Region and the market there in running the care through the direct system, the direct care system through Walter Reed and Fort Belvoir and some of the clinics. And then the third thing that we had as the Defense Health Agency is we were also designated as a combat support agency. And what that means is that we provide actual direct support to the combatant commands. And that's something that I think is a very pivotal and important task, especially as the President and the Secretary of Defense and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs are articulating their national strategies for military security and defense security. So I think the timing is great. Mm-hmm. And in each of those three areas that I just described, We've not only experienced additional evolution, but we've created greater maturation and understanding of how we can contribute to the effectiveness and efficiency of the military health system. Our actual portfolio in terms of a budget is close to $50, $51 billion a year. And that includes all of the elements that support the military health system, military construction, personnel, training, equipment, and things like that. Because out of that, we also have $15 billion that we use for the TRICARE health plan. So it's a very broadly dispersed, has significant financial resources attached to that. We have a significant number of personnel as well, both military and civilian. And depending on where we are here in the National Capital Region, we have in excess of 7,000 people dispersed in a variety of ways, doing a lot of different tasks. And then there are other personnel that we have in other areas.
So with all these changes, Admiral, what are some of your, say, top three management challenges that you faced, and how have you sought to address those challenges?
The first one is the NDAA 2017. And in NDAA 2017, not only do we have the oversight of the budget now, and I already told you what the budget looks like, and military construction, health information technology. Not only do we have that kind of oversight and authority, we also are going to be expanding that to make sure that we're running the hospitals in a more standardized way, because we also want to have a health system. We also want to co-create a health system that is truly designed with our patients in mind. Actually, they help us be the architects for that healthcare system. So it's an important piece that as we integrate our patients into the design of their healthcare system, we're also, in a stepwise fashion, creating a much more robust integrated system of readiness and health. So I see that as one of the greatest opportunities with the NDA 2017. The second area that I think has a lot of an abundance of opportunities here is in the DoD and military health system reform. Mm-hmm. And I think, and I'm sure industry is paying attention to that very closely. The second line of effort that he have is allies and partners. Mm-hmm. And while I know that the traditional thinking is how do we make and create these allies and partners with nations through their military, is there a role that we can help with what we do in the military health system? And then the big line of effort that Secretary of Defense has talked about is bringing business reform to DoD. And, I mean, what better place to try that than in the health sector? And actually, I think my timing happens to be just great, because you know that that's one of the things that are constantly assailing the civilian and private health sector. Is how do we do this in the best way possible, in a sustainable way? And then the third area, and this will probably be I know that Mark is going to be very familiar with this. I think the third area where I see great momentum being generated is in the deployment of MHS Genesis, our new electronic health record. And while it's easy to say, oh, it's an electronic health record, I think you both know that it's a lot more
that's
than
about that. That's the only thing that's easy to
yes,
say.
Yes, it's just to say it, exactly. Because, you know, what we're talking about is, you know, profound change management. Yes, yes. And I think that is a real mind shift. You know, you have to be prepared in order to really fully realize and capitalize on such a powerful tool. You have to be willing to change the way you do business.
Along with challenges, there are always unexpected or unanticipated surprises. No. And what has surprised you most since taking on this role?
Well, every day is an adventure, right? So I think that's one way of describing the experience. But I'll tell you, the actual surprise, or the thing that is actually more gratifying more than surprising, is that some of the solutions are actually quite straightforward. Sure. You know, when if I could pivot back to MHS Genesis and our deployment of that, being able to adopt new workflows, either in the clinical or business realm, when you look at it just, you know, in isolation, that solution set is extremely elegantly simple.
Yes.
You know, how do we use this tool to go from point A to point B in a more efficient way, right? Mm-hmm. And that's just a very straightforward approach. But it's interesting to me, and I guess this is the surprise, is that how we have actually accommodated our previous systems to try to get around it, and how many stop-offs or how many deviations did we take to go from point A to point B in the past, not necessarily because that's how we wanted to do it, but because our tools at the time didn't support taking a more direct route.
So I'd like to understand more about your leadership style. What makes an effective leader? What are some of the key principles that you follow that inform your efforts?
I think that what I try to always be mindful of is first being mindful. And I think you and I, we'd spoken a few minutes earlier about being in the moment.
Yes.
You have to be present. You really need to be present. And I don't take that lightly, because you have to be present in order to be attentive and listen. And I think that is one of the greatest skills, or one of the greatest tools that I think leaders have to have, is the ability to listen and really hear what somebody else is telling you. Because change is always challenging. And if you're not tuned in to what others are telling you, then you might miss that opportunity to help make that shift a little easier, or that, you know, that movement a little smoother. And so I think being attentive and listening is something that I feel is an important aspect of what I bring to my leadership style. The other thing that I feel is extremely important is being inclusive. And inclusive is something, is a term that gets thrown around. But the way I like to do that is inclusive and diversity seem to go hand in hand. But I've come to appreciate that diversity is really all about perspective. So if I'm trying to be inclusive, how do I gain the perspective of others? What is the best way that I can gain the perspective of others? And I think Mark has had personal experience of sitting in one of my meetings, or maybe several.
several.
And he has seen what happens in those meetings is that I typically make it a point at one point in the meeting, usually as we're wrapping up, to ask everybody what they think.
Oh, wow.
And so we go around the room, and I not only ask the people around the table, I ask the people who are around the room to give me thoughts on what they're thinking. It might have something to do with what we talked about. It could be something that is a totally different subject. But what it does, it gives me perspective. And it's interesting what you learn when you understand someone's perspective. So I think that even if it might seem, you know, not particularly related, it gives me insight into where that person might be in that moment and what might be important to them. And if I want them to be a part of my team, then this leads to my third attribute, or the third characteristic, is engagement.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah. So if I know where somebody's at, then it helps me understand how the best way to engage them. You know, how do I get to where they are? And then how do we figure out how we want to move? And then how do we create that collective impact? So, you know, I could go through a whole bunch of other things, but
you
does
pick
that...
up on those are wonderful. But how does, you know, your background as a surgeon,
uh-huh.
How have you taken some of what you learned
as
an active surgeon,
yeah,
to your life now, if you will?
The truth is that for me as a surgeon, it was so important for me to connect with my patients.
Okay.
And many times, I mean, patients don't come in just for the sake of having surgery, right? They usually need surgery for some reason. And so recognizing that when patients come to me as a surgeon, they have already, I mean, there are a whole host of emotions that they're experiencing. And, you know, my ability to put them at ease and be able to hear what's going on and to understand what they would like to see as, you know, coming out of the surgery, or what some of the things are that are really weighing heavily on them. How can I be more responsive and attentive to meeting their needs while I'm also taking care of any surgical needs that they have? So just that piece has really sensitized me to understanding that everyone comes in with some kind of emotional state that if I can tune into quickly and appreciatively, then we can start having that conversation and engaging, and even with my patients, creating that collective impact. So that's a part of my leadership that I got from my experience as a surgeon. And I think then, you know, just as a follow-on, again, Mark has seen this, is that my experience as a surgeon and understanding the hospital system also attuned me to where some of the opportunities are for creating more efficiencies and how we can actually drive change in a more meaningful way.
What are the strategic priorities for the Defense Health Agency? We will ask its director, Vice Admiral Raquel Bono, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.